Thank you for having us here tonight. I'm grateful to your pastor for risking an invitation for us to be with you. This is the first time that we have done anything like this, where we've given some kind of report about what the Lord has been doing among us. And we're going to attempt to do something tonight that I hope will be a blessing to you. I know it'll be a blessing to me, and that is that we're going to share in who brings to you various aspects of the report. And one of the things that I've learned as the Lord has led us here to Ohio is the large network of sister churches that are already here in the state. And that has been a wonderful encouragement to me. And as I've learned of that, one of the things that I came to realize is that a number of those churches have been praying for our ministry for more than 10 years now. Some of you are more familiar with our ministry in terms of its history than I am. I've not been there even quite a year yet. And some of you were praying for our ministry even before it began. And so I come tonight just to thank you. Everything that we are going to share with you tonight, I'm sure, has been seeded, S-E-E-D-E-D, seeded by your prayers over the last decade plus. And we're so grateful for those prayers, and God has been answering, and he's been answering even more so here in the last year. We did bring a contingent with us tonight. I'll give quick introductions. And my wife is here on the front row, Jean, and she lived up in the Mansfield area when she and I started dating, and we were married, engaged up at Mohican State Park, and married in Ohio. So we have some Buckeye, not blood, but connections, all right, through all of that. And then our two youngest children are here, Isaac, who is 15, and then our daughter, Ariella. Why don't you two stand? Ariella, who is 12. Okay, you may be seated. And then we have our elder, who some of you know, Jake Swanson and his wife, Liz. And if you guys can stand, Jake will be coming in a moment to share some aspects with you. And then their four children are with them tonight. And if you all will stand, Jakey is the oldest on this end, and Joel next to him, and then Ashley, and then Daisy. If you all will turn around, maybe, just let everybody see you, okay? All right, very good. And then our deacon, Phil Gordon, and his wife, Lori, are also here, and you'll hear from Phil as well tonight. Can the two of you very kindly stand? I'm making enemies tonight, I'm sure. So go ahead, you do a pirouette, too. There you go. So, all right. It seemed to me when your pastor extended the invitation that it really would be better for you to hear from the three of us rather than from just me. And my thinking really, there are multiple reasons behind that, but the first of those is I think we can actually do better together than perhaps any one of us could do by ourselves. And I know that this is true, that there are aspects of the story that we are going to relay to you tonight that these men are able to tell far better than I can tell. And so I'm very grateful that they've come. This is a story in which we all are sharing of what the Lord is doing, and it just seems very appropriate for you to hear it from all of us. And so what we'll do, in just a moment, Jake, our elder, is going to come. And he's going to sort of cover a transitional period in the life of our church. Then I'll come back up and give some more of the story. And then Phil is going to come and tell more of the story. And then I'll get up at the end and try to tie it all together as best as possible. So Jake, at this point, I'll turn it over to you.
Again, thank you for having us.
And what I want to do is just start by reminding us of a passage that Jesus spoke in Matthew chapter 16, and this was the context where Jesus asked his disciples who men say that he is. And you remember where Peter said that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus, based on that confession, said and gave the assurance that he would build his church, that Christ would build his church. And this story of our church is part of Christ fulfilling that promise and giving us that assurance. And certainly what Jesus had in mind is it's not just one local church. He is going to see that his church, his universal church, will be established and will continue. But no doubt, our church has a part in that. And as probably most of you know, our church started about 10 years ago. This was in 2012, and it was started in August, I think it was, August of 2012, and the church met in the home of Phil and Lori Gordon. And from that point, and our pastor, Nathaniel Pringle, who has been here before, some of you, perhaps most of you know, he was the pastor that started the church. And from the Gordon's home, the church met in their home for several months, and then the Lord opened up a hotel that the church met in, and then within the first year and a half or so, we were able to acquire a rental property, and our church met in the rental property there for a bit, and then the rental property, that's where we meet now. So we met in the hotel for about a year, and then we're meeting at Whitney Drive right now. Well, I'm going to fast forward to November of 2020. Nathaniel Pringle told us that the Lord opened up a new position for him at another ministry, and so he was going to be resigning as our pastor and taking that position. And we're a small church, and we were shocked, and we weren't sure what would happen if our church would actually continue to survive. So there was a lot of uncertainty among ourselves. We weren't sure what was going to happen. But as we asked the question, like, well, how do we proceed, or should we proceed, we had a strong sense that the Lord had providentially placed us in Milford and that he had a continued purpose for us there to reach that community. So we started, you know, praying for a pastor. And one theologian has said that God is always at work, though we cannot see it, preparing people he has chosen for leadership. And when crisis comes, God fits his appointee into the place ordained for him. And we certainly feel that and felt that about the appointee that God had for us. So we contacted Pastor Vincent, I think back in December of 2020, and by March of 2021, we had called him as our pastor, and he accepted the call, and we're very confident that God has a purpose for us, and we're very thankful for that. And what I want to leave with you is that, and as you continue to hear part of the story of how God has provided for our church, and I want you to go away with the fact that our hope is that God would be praised through the story that he is weaving and that he's working out, because this is his church, and Christ is the head of the church, and so we're very grateful to Christ his provision, and I'm going to turn it over at this point.
Thank you, Tim.
The Lord really used Jake as the elder of the church and leading them through that transitional period. He worked very closely with Phil, and when they began conversations with me and I got to know more and more of the people in the church, my heart grew very attached to this ministry. And I've often thought, and I thought in those months that, you know, if they were, you know, if the Lord said, I want you to go and sort of replant a church, and I'm going to give you these 20 people to help you, I think nearly any prospective pastor would think, really? I get to start with those people? And it really has been exciting for me, for my wife, to see the family that the Lord had put together already, and even the formative leadership of Pastor Pringle in leaving the church in the condition and in the state of unity in which we first found it. When you go to a new ministry, if you read all the books on pastoral ministry and pastoral philosophy, nearly all of them encourage you not to make any changes quickly, to wait a year, 2 years, sometimes 5 years, depending on the situation, but just go easy, don't make any changes, and spend the time necessary to build the appropriate relationships within the church. And that was my intention. And very quickly after the church had called us and we had accepted, I learned of something that happened just before, and that was that our landlord had called the church and basically said, you need to move. I'm selling the building. And so right out of the gate, the Lord put us in a place of need, and it was a pretty significant need, and it was, you know, where are we going to meet? And Jake mentioned that Christ is the head of the church. But as we began to talk and pray together about what the Lord might have for us, another reality about Christ became very vivid to us. And that is in Ephesians 1, Christ, in Ephesians 5, he's called the head of the church. But in Ephesians 1, Paul tells us that Christ is the head of all things. And then the way that verse is constructed, the way to interpret that is for the advantage of the church. So he's head of the church, and he's the head of all things for the advantage of the church. And so we claim that as we began to look at properties. They all belonged to the Lord. He was the head of all those properties. And whatever would be for our ultimate advantage, we knew the Lord could lead us to and provide for us. And fairly early, in fact, a conversation began with another ministry on the night that the church met together to vote to call my wife and I to come. And a man from another ministry, Grace Baptist Church, in the town of Milford, just happened by our prayer meeting that night because his church was not holding a prayer meeting. And in conversation with Phil, we learned that that church had a sense that they were dying and that they were looking perhaps for what to do with their building and property. And this was just about a week and a half or so after we learned that we were going to have to move. And we began to have conversations with this ministry. We were getting bits and pieces from one of the men. There were only 5 members left in the church, and we were getting bits and pieces from another of the men in the church, and we weren't really sure what the whole story was, but we were engaged in conversation with them, and on one of the times when our family was up visiting, we were actually able to meet together with in that building on a Wednesday night for prayer meeting. And then following the meeting, we had our first face-to-face interaction with the three people in leadership in that little church of five. And in the aftermath of that, we realized this had some real possibilities for us, that perhaps this could be the place the Lord was providing. And we still weren't quite sure if they felt that way. And so we were praying about it. We were doing our investigation. And over time, we realized gradually that we were moving to the top of their list of options as far as a prospective buyer of the property. And the day that we realized that we sort of had a leg up on anybody else who might be interested, they were having an insurance settlement to get a new roof for their church. And they called Phil and asked him what color shingles he would prefer on that building. And at that point, we thought, you know, this just might work. We gave him our choice. Maybe we just told him to do whatever. I can't remember. But the first option they didn't have. Second option was out of stock. And we got the third option anyway. It was the only one that was available. So we have a brown roof on that building. And as conversations continued, our interest was to try to make an offer on that building. It had been, I'll give you some numbers that may help, but it had been appraised recently for right at $400,000. It was a building that was 50 years old, and it had 4 acres with it right on Main Street in Milford. We currently meet in an industrial park on the outskirts of Milford, a sort of hard-to-find low traffic area on Saturdays and Sundays. So this one had some real possibilities. And we talked with them because we knew that they had offered the property free of charge to another ministry, not a church ministry, but a charitable kind of ministry. And that ministry had turned them down. We knew it had been appraised for right at $400,000, and we knew we couldn't afford that. But if we were going to make an offer to them, we didn't want to insult them by an offer that we felt we could actually afford. And so I talked with their deacon. We were still living in Greenville, South Carolina at the time. And I just was trying to very gingerly feel out if we made an offer at significantly less than the appraised value, would that just close the door on the conversation, or would we still be able to talk with them? And he told me on the phone, he said, nothing you offer will offend us. And so that was reassuring. And then I got a call back the next day, and we were getting ready to make a trip to come again. And he said, we would like to actually come. We were having a leadership meeting on Thursday of that week. He said, our team would like to come over and talk to your leadership in preparation for the meeting that you're going to have with your congregation on the following Sunday, because we think we have some information that would be helpful to you. So they came to a leadership meeting. And in the leadership meeting, the lead deacon, we kind of turned the floor over to him, and he was sharing their interest in working with us. And then he handed the baton off to another man on their property committee. And he took out little coupons. And they were from, I forget what it was, some little game place. And he wanted us all to write down what he said on the backside of those coupons. And he said, the price that we will accept from you in terms of an offer, he said, the first number is a 1. And then he paused, and he said, and there are no more numbers. So we went from being uncertain what we could propose and thinking of something that would really be embarrassing to propose potentially to them, something in the neighborhood of $150,000 to perhaps $200,000, And they're coming to us saying, all we want is $1. Well, that was overwhelming to us. And we began to think, you know, the Lord has abundantly provided. And so we proceeded on those terms. And, you know, we were hoping it might move rather quickly. And things were going kind of slowly. And what we came to realize is that they could not get among themselves, the five of them, the necessary unity to get a two-thirds vote to sell us the property for $1. And so August 8th of that year, they finally had their vote, and sure enough, it was 3 in favor and 2 not in favor. And that was disappointing news to us. We were just, you know, what do we do with that? It really seemed like the Lord was in this. We had formalized the offer to them, asked them to vote on it, and the Lord really seemed to shut the door. But along with their no vote on the sale was an offer for the two ministries to merge. And basically for them, if that was ended up being permissible to us, they would end up giving us their property with the building, and then all of the savings that they had accrued in the last few years. Well, a merger, of course, is a very different conversation. This was a different ministry, had some different philosophical elements to it, had been 60 years old, the building was 50 years old, and just a lot of elements to its history and character that we just weren't sure if it really would be a match. So I contacted 5 different men who had either been through mergers or had planted churches or had counseled people who had been in those kinds of situations. And I frankly was very surprised. All 5 of them unanimously said, you need to pursue this. The Lord may stop it, but you need to pursue it as far as you can. And so we wrote them back, we accepted the rejection, and we sort of counter-proposed to the merger idea and just asked if they would begin to meet with us for a period of at least 6 weeks. And during that time, our leadership would begin to really engage in conversation together. And through that whole process, really some amazing stories of just the Lord's gentle leading. It could have been a very delicate, I mean, there were delicate components to it, but the Lord, he maneuvered us through all of them. And as we went through the process and had all the conversations, continued praying about it, our congregation really began to sense that this is really, we should go forward with this. If the Lord will confirm all of this through votes of both ministries, this is something we need to pursue. And so we kept slowly going. As part of that process, we voted to change our name from Eastside Community Bible Church to Grace Bible Church. There's a little bit of history to that name. We wanted to retain the Bible, and we felt like we had indeed been graced by the Lord, and that if he would allow this, that the story would really be a story of grace upon grace. And so in November of that year, we changed our name to Grace Bible Church. And then in the subsequent weeks, we were able to vote on the merger. Their church voted on the merger. And then finally, in January of this year, that merger was complete. That congregation of 5 was primarily senior citizens, and they didn't have a pastor. And we were a younger congregation. And we had established church leadership, and we had some people, but we didn't have a place, and we didn't have a property. And the Lord supplied for each ministry really what it needed in that merger. And though none of those 5 have yet joined officially to our church, we really thank the Lord that to this point they're all still with us, been vocally supportive and cheerfully encouraging of everything that the Lord seems to be doing. And they've really fit themselves to us at this point. They've not insisted on their way or their old way of doing things. They really have been open to Bible teaching and seemingly very thankful for it. So we rejoice in that. At the same time, the Lord has slowly been bringing some new faces to our congregation. We right now are quite an eclectic group, I think. Right at Christmas last year, he brought to us a man who'd been an Anglican youth pastor for over 25 years, and is no longer in the ministry. He's pursued another career, but he's come to our ministry and has jumped in with both feet. He's not a member yet, but he has certainly endeared himself to the members of our congregation. On my first day in June of last year, coming as a pastor, there was another man who visited for the first time. He said, "I've never been to a church where, you know, when I visited, the pastor got up and joined the church." But that's what he saw that day. And the next week, he was back with his wife, and he and his wife have been with us so far ever since. The Lord had a couple move to the Cincinnati area temporarily because of an abnormality in the baby that the wife was carrying, and they were being sent from West Virginia to the University of Cincinnati. She had surgery on the baby, still in the womb. And so for a couple of months, our family, church family, really got closely acquainted with them. And the Lord has put it on the heart of this couple, and now their baby. It's not on his heart quite yet. He's only a couple months old, but they're trying to move back to Cincinnati, in part to be near the University of Cincinnati Hospital for ongoing care for their child. But our people so loved them during the time that they were with us that they just wanted to come back, and the Lord put it on their heart to try to partner with us there. There's another family who was just passing through, and they dropped in on our service and was able to speak briefly to them while they were with us and have a word of prayer with them. After we finished praying, they were from over in Indiana. When we lifted our heads, their eyes were full of tears. And I'd sensed something was maybe a little unsettled, but that seemed to confirm that their hearts were burdened about something, even though they were not open. But in the aftermath of that visit, the Lord has put it on their heart to actually move to the Cincinnati area, again, to partner with us in the ministry there. They're in the process of doing that. The husband has accepted a job, and he begins early in May. And so we're thankful for local people that the Lord is introducing us to and giving us opportunities to keep extending the reach of the church's ministry. And then we're thankful for these others who the Lord seems to be putting it on their heart to be part of a re-church plan of the nature of ours. We, of course, in a ministry like this, what the Lord is doing physically, he's sort of taking us from the outskirts of Milford and he's moving us in. And we're trusting that that's a visible object lesson, really, of what the Lord intends to do through our ministry, to help us to grow deeper roots in Milford and to have a more extensive reach right into the heart of Milford, and then, Lord willing, extending from there into the broader Milford area. One last thing before Phil comes. When early in this process, we began to sense that things were happening at such a rapid pace that we were going to quickly lose track of the details. And so we started keeping a log together as leaders of entering remarkable providences in a timeline of the Lord's gracious provision. And I brought with you a little object lesson tonight that I showed to our people, because as we listed these, it's like the Lord multiplied them. And over the course of the last 10 to 11 months, the way the Lord has directed and the way that he has supplied really has been overwhelming to us and confirming on so many levels. And what I have here is the first sheet. And if I list them all, it goes down to 9 pages and counting, all right, at this point of just careful entries trying to record the Lord's hand and his fingerprints in what is happening. I think all of us feel like so much of what the Lord has done is not explainable by any human involvement. There's no one of us who can get any credit for what the Lord is doing. He's done things that are beyond what we really ever could have asked or even thought. And we've been so grateful to walk by faith through this and to just let the Lord do what is in his heart to do for us. And it has deepened our anticipation that he does have a future for our ministry. And all of the prayers that you all have prayed, all of the sacrifices that the people of our congregation have made over the 10 years of the life of the church, all of the investment of Pastor Pringle, all of that has not been in vain. Okay? God remembers it all, and he's using it all and weaving it all together into what he's doing now, and we are deeply grateful. Phil, if you'll come at this point, and he's going to pick up the story with the beginning of this calendar year. And he's got some pictures to show you that I think will bless you. So go ahead, Phil.
Before I start with January of this year and show you pictures of the sort of the physical aspect of some of the story that Pastor's just related, I want to go back to March of last year, almost 11 months ago now, probably. So put yourself in the situation, okay? We've just met this man from out of the blue who is from a church that has a building and not much else, and they don't know what to do with their building. And we've just voted to call Pastor Vincent to be our pastor and also found out that we don't have a place to meet. And so Jake has to make a phone call to Pastor Vincent and say, here's the good news is we voted to call you. The bad news is we don't have a place to meet. And you should probably know that before you tell us the answer to that our call of you. And I then called the pastor now not too long after that, and we were chatting about something, and I think we were starting to get working on a property search or on a search for where to go. And in the middle of that conversation, he asked me a question. He said, would you happen to be aware of any churches in the area that may be dying and may have a property or a building? And I said, did Jake tell you something when you guys talked? Because I hadn't shared anything about the conversation that the man that we had met. And the Lord put it in his heart to ask that question. I said, well, actually, yes. It turns out, you know, who would think to ask that question? But the Lord was working all these things in our hearts and our minds, not only us, but of the other church. And so that he said yes, and you know also the rest of the story in terms of the other church now. So what you're looking at on the screen, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the building, actually, the physical aspect of where we've been and where we are and where we're going in the future here and that part of the story. So what you're looking at on the screen is an overhead view of our new property. And you may not be able to see it, but upper left-hand corner is a fairly major size road. It says Main Street right there, and as the name implies, Main Street is Main Street Milford. So Pastor said the Lord's pushing us into the center of the city. Our current location, if we get the little street that we're on, Whitney Drive, if there are 10 cars an hour, that's probably rush hour for that little location. Main Street, there would be, you'll count 10 cars in less than a minute. I mean, it's a high traffic area, high visibility, high enough that it's usually hard to get out of the parking lot onto the street. So the Lord's putting us into a very different context in terms of visibility, and we rejoice in that. You can see the building there with the new brown roof on it and the parking lot as well. That's a picture of the outside of the building. It was built in 1971, so right at just a little over 50 years old. And it shows it. It's a little bit of a fixer-upper, and so that's kind of what we're doing now. That was what the inside of the building looked like when we took possession of it. They had a sanctuary with a seating capacity of about 75, and that's actually about the right size for us with some growth. But we had some decisions to make. What do we do with the facility? So we could have, oh, I forgot to put this slide in. This is a picture of the property. You can see upper left-hand corner is the zoom in of this photo that shows you the church building and Main Street and the parking lot, but you can see that it's quite a large property. 4 acres in the middle of town is very, very unusual in this day and age. And you can see development all around us. And so not only do we have the building that will meet our needs for the near term, but we've got room to grow and lots of potential. And we're excited about that as well and what the Lord might have in mind in giving us such a unique property in such an ideal location. So the first thing we started to consider then, once the property became ours in January, is when the merger was effective, was what are we going to do to the physical building? And the words here are a little bit small, but the range of options would have been, we could have moved in the next day. They were using it as a church. It was an active church facility with all the things that you need to do church. So we could have just moved in. On the other end of the spectrum of this scale was basically start over, take it down to the shell and reconstruct a total gut and remodel. And we prayed over this, we considered it as a congregation, and we actually decided to go towards the major remodel side of this. And if you've ever tried to live in a house and remodel at the same time, you realize that's kind of difficult. So we decided, we've got another place to meet that we're actively meeting at. If we want to work on the property and kind of bring it up into the 21st century and reconfigure it to meet our needs the best that we think that it could, let's do the remodel before we move in, and let's do it right. Let's take it down to the walls, and let's design from scratch, and let's start over. So that's what we're about right now. We've called it phase one, which is a major reconfiguration of the building. And then phase two, we do have some plans to begin to expand the footprint a little bit. We will fit in the space. It will meet our needs, but just barely. And so we're thinking about, as the Lord prospers, as Pastor gave you some examples of growth that we've already seen just in the last 6 months to a year. And if that continues, we will be out of space before too much longer, even after we move in, which would be a good problem to have. So we started to think about what phase two would look like as we start to add perhaps some ability to have a little bit more space. And our timeline looks like this: about a 6 month period of time. In January, we engaged an architect. In February, we worked on the design and getting that right. In March, and you may not be able to see the word there, I coined a term for what we were doing in the March timeframe. I called it salvolition. It was demolition, but it was an eye towards saving as much as we could so that we could reuse those materials and hopefully save some money. And then we really hit the ground very hard running at the beginning of April when we got building permits and all the things that we needed to be able to do that. The actual building back after we had gutted the place during the first few months of the year. And then April, May, and June is really the timeline for building back. And you can see in the picture there, I've got a few more pictures to show you, but the current state as of Friday is that we got it back to an empty building, and now we're starting to build walls back. So we've completed framing at this point for the new construction. Our floor plan, we've got a sanctuary, we've got a couple of classrooms, all the basics that you need. But not a whole lot of extra. We're being tight and frugal on those spaces. I want to tell you one story, and then I'll show you a few more pictures, and then I'll be done. But another story to build on the providences and on that 8-page or 9-page paper that Pastor just showed you, several of those have to do with one particular really intervention that God has made that we rejoice in. One of our big debates, if you could, I'll point on this one over here, these two classrooms. We were struggling with the sanctuary that you see here. This size is almost to the foot exactly what we have in our current space. Okay, same shape, same size, everything, which obviously is meeting our needs. But as the Lord's been adding people, we're beginning to feel it. And so the struggle was, if we move into this new building, we do all this work, we move into this new building, and we're out of space on day one, is that wise? But did we have a choice, I think, is what it came down to, once we fit everything else in there. And these two classrooms right here were kind of a major debate topic for us. Do we need those classrooms? Well, we do. We've got Sunday schools and all the things that you're familiar with, youth ministries and kids' classes and things like that. So we need classroom space. We need Sunday school space. But is there a way to make it flexible enough so that we can have the classrooms when we need them, but when we don't need them, like for morning worship, if we need more space than there, can we be able to use that whole space? Can we make this flexible, in other words? Well, we talked to the architect about that, and he gave us an estimate of somewhere between $30,000 and $40,000 to put flexible walls into these spaces so that we could open them up when we need it or close them off when we don't. And you've all seen, you may even have some of them here, these movable partitions that do a nice job of hiding sound and isolation, but they're quite expensive. And he said $30,000 to $40,000, and that was even modest compared to what we thought we would really need. And that was a budget buster for us. That was a significant percentage of what we had to spend on the whole project. And we knew we couldn't do that. And so we were really struggling with what we could do to try to be good stewards and try to prepare ourselves for current ministry, but also for the future. What we really had in mind, ideally, was something like the picture that you see here. This is just a picture off the web. Some of these movable partitions, you can easily put them away when you don't need them, but get the space when you... That's the $40,000 option that we couldn't afford and we ruled out. Well, coincidentally, and I use that word obviously in quotations here because we understand the Lord's superintendent over the whole process, we found a set of partitions in a church, actually not far from here, over in Newark, just a little east of here. We found a set of partitions in a church that had them installed 40 years ago and basically never used them. So they'd been sitting in a closet for 40 years and like new conditions, and they basically wanted almost to give them away. And so, long story in and of itself, but what the Lord provided in that was this set of partitions. That this is a picture of them inside of our building in Milford, just temporarily sitting there when we went and picked them up and brought them in. But basically new partitions, the $40,000 models, if you were to buy them today, and we got them for a fraction of that price, far less than 10%. We think we will have them totally installed and in place and everything it takes to put them up and make them functional for less than 10% of what the cost would have been new. So we could afford that. And the Lord provided that, really miraculous. So we got everything we desired and we thought we couldn't have, but the Lord gave us miraculously, really, what we desired and has met as preparing, allowing us to prepare for the future in a very interesting and blessed way. As we've worked on the project, I have two slides here of just a collage of pictures. I say we've had help from near. These are, I think, every member, not only member, but attendee of our church has been to the property, either from a few hours to several days, to in some cases weeks and months since January, to volunteer and to lend a hand and all of the work that's gone on so far, starting from January up through the time that we're here now, and you see a few pictures there, and maybe even at this point a couple of familiar faces. Several of these faces are people that are here tonight. Pastor mentioned the couple that was temporarily in Cincinnati for their child with the health issues and are working to try to move back to Cincinnati and be part of our church. That's Ian, that's the father right there, who actually, the brief time they were here, jumped right in and helped. So it's been a great building of our own kind of church family as we've had the opportunity to work on this together, and we'll continue to do that. And then help from afar. We've had two large teams, one team that came and worked on clearing the property, trees and brush and things like that, and another team that was just departed on Saturday. It was here last week that did framing and electrical for us. In fact, two of them stayed over to help finish the electrical for us. Al Ellison in the middle stayed. These are all from the church where Pastor Vincent had formerly ministered before coming to us. Everybody on the page here, on the slide, is from that ministry in Greenville. Al came and spent the entire month of April, basically as sort of an assistant general contractor, helping us get through and just digging in. As you can see, he's standing in a trench in the slab there, up to his knees, literally in mud. And so Al lent a hand, and then another man named Anthony Griffith, who came and helped us for a week back in April. I'm reminded of the Bible story. It's Exodus 31 is where you would find it. You probably, many of you know this story, but God had just spent 5 or 6 chapters giving Moses instructions as to how to build the tabernacle. And I'm sure, I mean, we're not told exactly what's in Moses' mind there, but I think Moses, probably there was some sense of being overwhelmed. The detail of the instructions, the magnitude of the task, Lord, you want me to do what? And how am I going to go about doing this? Again, I'm reading in here. We're not told all those things, but you can just imagine him being a little bit overwhelmed. And God tells Moses in those first 6 verses or so, 6-9 verses of Exodus 31, I've got you covered. I've got 2 men, Bezalel and Aholiab. I've already equipped them to do this work. First, I filled them with the Spirit of the Lord, is what the text tells us. And then I've given them the intellect, the skill, the artisanship, and the workmanship, and the craftsmanship to do the job. And they will do, this is what's in the text, they will do everything that I've commanded you to do. So in other words, and I'm not saying we're building the tabernacle. I'm not trying to equate the two. Okay, the point that I am making is God never gives us a task to do that he doesn't provide the means for us to do. And this has been such an encouragement to all of us to see God be faithful in that exact way, to give us internally, from inside and from outside, exactly what we needed, and has already prepared it in advance. It's all worked out. We have a long way to go yet, okay? We still have basically an empty shell with some framed walls in it, but God's given us all the confidence by showing us already that he's already prepared the way, and he is going to meet the need. We unveiled the banner. This will be a permanent sign soon, Lord willing, but we unveiled the banner to the public. We've been sort of incognito to the public for the last few years. We took the old sign down, last few months. We took the old sign down. There's been all kinds of activity going on. We get a lot of people driving by, you know, rubbernecking, gawking, driving into the parking lot. Few of them even stop and say, what's going on here? So this high visibility, high traffic area, we've got the community's interest. They wonder what's going on there, what's going to happen. Well, we let them in on the secret this week. We put up the banner that says, announces who we are. And now we're sort of being ready to receive them as we get the building ready. And you can see some of the pictures, especially of the work that was achieved just last week and where we stand on that. So my final slide, I don't know if you can read this or not. We've put up here above the door going into the building the first part of Psalm 127:1. Unless the Lord builds a house, those who build it labor in vain. Very important for us to all remember that. That we can get caught up in the physical aspects of executing a project. And it's very exciting. You know, all the things the Lord's doing here are very exciting. We can focus on that and forget it has to be the Lord's work. And unless he's in it, we're doing that work in vain. And so, Lord, protect us from that mindset of doing the work in our way and be continually dependent upon him, realizing that he's the one that's actually building the work and sustaining it. And I think I'm turning it back to Pastor Vincent.
Thank you.
Phil has been our Bezalel. The Lord has definitely gifted him to lead us through this phase of the building. And I think Jake and I both, as elders in the church, are just delighted for the way the Lord is using Phil. Our time is just about done, but I thought if you'll indulge me here for just a moment, I wanted to share with you one scriptural thought and perhaps leave this with you. In Isaiah 38, I think most of you are familiar with the story of King Hezekiah, whom God had greatly used in the nation of Israel. And at the time of that account in Isaiah 38, Israel is surrounded by the Assyrian army. And as you read through that account, in that whole context where Israel's life seems threatened, and very much is, Hezekiah grows gravely ill, and he actually receives a divine diagnosis that he is going to die. And he prays to the Lord. And we don't know exactly the content of his prayer, but what the passage unfolds is that the Lord heard his prayer and then told him that he would graciously preserve Hezekiah's life for 15 more years. And if you think about that, we actually feel like there is a little bit of a parallel with our church situation. There was a potential diagnosis that the church was perhaps going to die. And in entreating the Lord, there was an answer that no, the life of the ministry is preserved. God graciously preserved the life of our ministry. And just for the sake of the parallel, the question that has been on our minds is if he would give us 15 more years, we've been graciously preserved for what? What are we going to do? How will we steward the gift of extra time that God has given to our assembly? In Hezekiah's case, God also told him, I'm going to deliver you from these Assyrians. And God did that. And you know the story, how in a night God sends an angel and 185,000 Assyrian soldiers are slain. He also used Hezekiah during that time to build Israel up and fortify defenses and to strengthen Israel. It was really a time of prosperity under Hezekiah's preserved extended life. But the passage goes on to record the fame that came to Israel and particularly to Hezekiah when the story of the miraculous extension of his life was known. And in fact, a delegation was sent to Israel from Babylon. This is at the beginning of Isaiah 39. And previous to that, Hezekiah had actually written sort of an extended poem, a tribute to God for delivering him with a miraculous healing. We're also told at the end of Isaiah 38 that Isaiah would go to the temple and offer a sacrifice of thanksgiving to the Lord, which God permitted him to do. But when this delegation from Babylon came, Hezekiah walks those foreigners through all the treasures of Israel. And we don't know the details of that tour, but what he did in that moment greatly displeased the Lord. And again, not knowing the details, the suggestion is when you compare that passage with the parallel account in 2 Chronicles 32, the suggestion is that the way that Hezekiah conducted that tour to this foreign delegation, somehow he brought more attention to himself than to the God who had miraculously delivered him and miraculously delivered his people. And what 2 Chronicles 32 ends up recording is that Hezekiah did not return to the Lord for the benefit that he had received. This was a grievous thing in the sight of God. He had done great, unexpected, miraculous things. And somehow the glory was redirected away from him toward an individual who had been a recipient of those blessings. And our burden really is not just to ask the question, we have been graciously preserved, and for what? What is it that is in the mind of God for this season of our church's life? But we've also been burdened that we would return to the Lord for the benefit that we have received, that we would in no way try to inject ourselves somehow into a story that was of God's writing and of his making, and in any way attempt to direct glory to a human individual. God has surprised us. He has graciously blessed us. We know that this is in his heart to do for all of his people and for the entirety of the body of Christ. And our desire really is to be the best stewards of the manifold grace of God that he has shined and showered upon us. And you're the first opportunity outside of our little world down there in Milford to really tell this story. And we trust that in telling it to you, that we have, at least in a tangible way, returned to the Lord for the benefit that we have received. He has been very kind to us. And that kindness, again, is in part his weaving together of your prayers for us into his will for our congregation. And we're very thankful to be here tonight to share it with you. Pastor.